He is a servant of the city.
That's what I mean.
Surely we represent the city.
He won't see it that way. And you know what Vimes thinks about kings? It was a Vimes who chopped the head off the last one. There's a bloodline that thinks a swing of an axe can solve anything.
Now, Molly, you know Vimes had probably take an axe to Vetinari if he thought he could get away with it. No love lost there, I fancy.
He won't like it, that's all I tell you. Vetinari keeps Vimes wound up. No knowing what happens if he unwinds all at once.
He's a public servant, snapped Dr. Downey. Queen Molly made a face which was not difficult in one so naturally well endowed, and sat back.
So this is the new way of things, is it? She muttered. Lot of ordinary men sit around a table and talk, and suddenly the world's a different place. The sheep turn round and charge the shepherd.
There's a soiree at Lady Silach's house this evening, said Dr. Downey, ignoring her. I believe Nobbs is being invited. Perhaps we can meet him. Vimes told himself he was really going to inspect the progress on the new watch house in Chitling Street. Cockbill Street was just around the corner, and then he'd call in, informally. No sense in sparing a man when they were pushed anyway, what with those murders and Vetinari and Detritus's anti-slab crusade. He turned the corner and stopped. Nothing much had changed, that was the shocking thing. After, too many years, things had no right not to have changed. But washing lines still crisscrossed the street between the grey ancient buildings. Antique paint still peeled in the way cheap paint peeled, when it had been painted on wood too old and rotten to take paint. Cockbill Street people were usually too penniless to afford decent paint, but always far too proud to use whitewash. And the place was slightly smaller than he remembered, that was all. When had he last come down here? He couldn't remember. It was beyond the shades, and up until quite recently the watch had tended to leave that area to its own unspeakable devices. Unlike the shades, though, Cockbill Street was clean, with the haunting empty cleanliness you get when people can't afford to waste dirt. For Cockbill Street was where people lived who were worse than poor, because they didn't know how poor they were. If you asked them, they would probably say something like, "Mustn't grumble," or "There's far worse off than us," or "We've always kept our heads above water and we don't owe nobody nowt." He could hear his granny speaking, "No one's too poor to buy soap." Of course, many people were, but in Cockbill Street, they bought soap just the same. The table might not have any food on it, but by gods it was well scrubbed. That was Cockbill Street, where what you mainly ate was your pride. What a mess the world was in, Vimes reflected. Constable Visit had told him the meek would inherit it, and what had the poor devils done to deserve that? Cockbill Street people would stand aside to let the meek through. For what kept them in Cockbill Street, mentally and physically, was their vague comprehension that there were rules. And they went through life filled with a quiet, distracted dread that they weren't quite obeying them. People said that there was one law for the rich and one law for the poor, but it wasn't true. There was no law for those who made the law, and no law for the incorrigibly lawless. All the laws and rules were for those people stupid enough to think like Cockbill Street people. It was oddly quiet. Normally, there'd be swarms of kids and carts heading down towards the docks, but today the place had a shut-in look. In the middle of the road was a chalked hopscotch path. Vimes felt his knees go weak. It was still here. When had he last seen it? 35 years ago? 40? So it must have been drawn and redrawn thousands of times. He'd been pretty good at it. Of course, they'd played it by Ankh Morpork rules. Instead of kicking a stone, they'd kicked William Scuggins. It had been just one of the many inventive games they'd played which had involved kicking, chasing, or jumping on William Scuggins until he threw one of his famous wobblers and started frothing and violently attacking himself. Vimes had been able to drop William in the square of his choice 9 times out of 10. The 10th time, William bit his leg. In those days, tormenting William and finding enough to eat had made for a simple, straightforward life. There weren't so many questions you didn't know the answers to, except maybe how to stop your leg festering. Sir Samuel looked around, saw the silent street, and flicked a stone out of the gutter with his foot. Then he booted it, sir.